AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. We have got a lot of ground to cover on today's AgriTalk. We are going to talk USMCA enforcement, biofuels, beef prices, the administration's new equity plan, summertime availability of E15, the future of ethanol in an EV world, and we will get the latest on the regional severity of PRRS in the Midwest hog herd.
Live from the unofficial end of the official work week via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack. Then it's the CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, Jeff Cooper, and Pete Meyer from S&P Global Platts. Later, Dr. Paul Sundberg, Executive Director from the Swine Health Information Center. And right after the news, Greg Henderson from Drovers, I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Flory.
All right, Davis. Yeah, I'm petitioning right now for an extra, say, I don't know, 45, maybe 50 minutes for this morning's show, because it kind of feels like we're going to need it.
Bro, USDA Secretary. And then Jeff Cooper and Pete Meyer, are they going head-to-head? This sounds like a combustible conversation, perhaps.
No, absolutely not. They know each other. They are the conversation started yesterday afternoon on AgriTalk. Pete Meyer was my guest, and we were talking about some of the things that RFA is doing. And Pete asked some very specific questions. Why isn't the RFA more focused on sustainable aviation fuel, SAF? Why worry so much about E15 summertime availability? So we asked Jeff if he would come on and talk about that today.
And throw some ethanol on the fire, perhaps?
Throw a little ethanol on the fire, yes. Pete wants to come along for that conversation as well. And it's really – what I'm really looking forward to in this part of the conversation today is the space for ethanol in an EV world, because some people think that there is no space for ethanol in an EV world.
Right.
That's not correct. There's lots of space for sustainable fuels in an EV world, and so we're gonna have that conversation coming up in a little bit, after we have the conversation with Secretary Tom Vilsack. So really looking forward to that. We got a lot of ground.
Great.
Let's go.
Yes. Chip, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen will convene a meeting of top international financial officials next week to address a global food security crisis, with the heads of institutions, including the IMF, urging action to address dire consequences of record prices caused by Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The summit will take place in Washington alongside the spring meetings of the International Monetary Fund and World Bank. Now, just to put it in perspective, let's talk here at home. In the U.S., the cost of foods rose in March by the most in 10 months. The Producer Price Index report on Wednesday showed food costs climbed 2.4% from a month earlier. That's the largest monthly increase since May, and 11.2% from a year ago, indicating mounting grocery store bills for Americans in the coming months. The jump was driven by bigger increases in prices for grains, vegetables, cooking oils, and pork, suggesting the closely watched Consumer Price Index will soon reflect such advances. So these producer price increases are going to trickle down into the Consumer Price Index, and we'll be watching that very closely, Chip.
Absolutely. So for those that believe the 8.5% mark on inflation that we got in March was the high water mark, you've got a big increase, an 11.2% increase that has to be factored in and, of course, passed on to consumers at some point.
Well, President Biden says the U.S. will send additional military aid to Ukraine. The package will include drones, helicopters, and chip for the first time U.S. artillery. Ukraine says Russian soldiers have laced large swaths of the country with landmines and booby traps that can kill or injure civilians. Meanwhile, Russia said its Black Sea flagship was damaged and evacuated after ammunition on board blew up. Ukraine said it hit the vessel with cruise missiles.
There's lots of activity, and sorting it all out is nearly impossible. But it's wartime propaganda from both sides. I don't think there's any question about that.
Seems to be a difference of opinion on what happened to that ship. Right. Russian President Putin told top officials this week that Russia will begin seeking new customers and markets for oil as its traditional buyers have slowed purchases. The head of Lukoil, Russia's second largest oil company, says the firm has had to redirect fuel oil to power plants to avoid shutting refiners. The losses so far are modest, but traders and analysts expect the problems of getting crude from the ground to end users are likely to mount in the coming months as sanctions fracture a long-standing crude oil supply chain.
Right. The disruptions are numerous and going to be long-lasting.
Here at home, the Senate Ag Committee will begin its farm bill hearing process with the session April 29 at Michigan State University. Growing Jobs and Economic Opportunity 2023 Farm Bill Perspectives from Michigan is the title of the hearing, according to the panel, and will focus on agriculture as well as conservation, rural economic development, research, forestry, energy, and nutrition policies. China's zero-tolerance policy for coronavirus cases has analysts downgrading China's economic growth forecasts. Nearly 400 million people are estimated to be under some form of lockdown in China as officials try to stop a fast-moving Omicron outbreak that is beginning to weigh on the world's second-largest economy. And finally, Chip, airline fares were up 10.7% in March from February, just in time for the busy spring and summer travel months. Bookings were up 12% in March over 2019 levels. Spending on bookings, however, was up 28%, a sign inflation is having an effect on purchasing power. Chip.
Wow. Yeah, inflation's having an effect on a lot of consumers' decisions. Thank you, Davis. I want to get more on that right now from Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good morning, Chip. I'm great.
Yeah, okay. As Davis just said, inflation is causing consumers to make some tough decisions, not only when they're figuring out what flight they're going to take, but what they're going to put in the grocery cart.
Well, absolutely. So the IRI measured price against all foods in March was up 10.3%. And meat sales, this is the demand part of it, Chip, reached $6.3 billion. That's up 6% from a year ago. And despite the effects of the inflation, a retail supply chain continued to move 2.4% more pounds through the system in March than we did in March of 2019, which was the pre-pandemic. Now, obviously, Chip, as we mentioned, the dollars are higher. And just in ground beef alone, we sold $890 million in the United States in March, which was up 13%. So prices are higher for beef, 18.6% higher than they were a year ago. For pork, it's 16% higher than a year ago. We're still moving a lot of product through the supply chain.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the baseline number on the average retail beef price is pretty astonishing to me. $7.69 a pound. Now, that includes steaks, roast, burger, everything, right?
That includes everything. Now, specifically for ground beef, it was 4.76.
Okay.
So, yeah, ground beef has not hit $5 yet, but it's getting pretty close.
It's getting awfully close. Greg, thank you so much, buddy. Let's keep tabs on this and talk more about it later.
Thanks, Chip.
All right, that is Greg Henderson, editorial director at Drovers. Coming up next right here on AgriTalk, USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack.
AgriTalk is brought to you by AltoSid IGR, an easy-to-use feed-through IGR to control hornfly populations. AltoSid IGR delivers consistent results that show.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Find farm equipment on Machinery Pete's April 19 online auction. No reserve, no buyer fees. Start bidding now. Auctions.machinerypete.com.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you are with us. Davis Michelson is standing by.
Yes, sir.
Ready to jump into the conversation that we are going to have right now with USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack. Secretary Vilsack, welcome back to AgriTalk.
Thanks, Chip. It's good to be with you.
How are you feeling?
Well, I'm still testing positive, so I'm quarantined, living by myself here in the basement of my house. Other than that, life is good.
Okay.
It's a pain in the neck, I can tell you that.
Yeah, the symptoms are under control, though?
Yeah, no, that's not a problem.
Okay.
Not a problem.
Okay, good, good, good. Yeah, tested positive, basically, as soon as you got back from Mexico. Let's get a report on what you feel was accomplished in that meeting in Mexico with your counterparts.
Well, Chip, I think, first of all, it's important to establish relationships. And I think I had the opportunity to spend 2 hours with the Mexican president in a very detailed conversation about rural life and agriculture. And I think as a result of that, I feel confident that for the first time in 15 years, American potatoes are going to be able to cross the border in all parts of Mexico. And that's an export opportunity that we've been working on, as I say, for 15 years. I also got a reassurance that I think there's an understanding and appreciation for the importance of the importation of U.S. corn into the Mexican market for feed. I think the president recognizes that his cattle industry depends in large part on that feed coming into the country. So I don't expect and anticipate a significant disruption of that export opportunity.
Good.
So all in all, I think it was a positive trip. And I think I also understand a little bit about the concern the president has about their corn. You know, they have white corn down there,
right,
which they use in their food products. And they feel very proud about the fact that they, in essence, are the sort of the birthplace, if you will, of maize,
yep,
if you think about the history of Mexico. And they simply want to protect that. And I understand that. You know, we feel pretty strongly about the things that are uniquely American. And I think he feels very strongly about something that he believes is uniquely Mexican. But I don't think it's going to disrupt our ability to have the yellow corn, which is so important to go into feed.
Good. Good. Yeah, you jumped straight to the topic that I wanted to get to on that. So let's continue on now with some additional USMCA. How satisfied are you with the market access that we've got in Canada under USMCA for the dairy products?
Not satisfied at all. That's
okay.
One of the reasons why we pressed the trade representative to bring the case under the sort of the dispute resolution process of USMCA. Panel decided that Canada had to structure its TRQ, its tariff rate quota, differently. They basically, I think, are just doing a shell game up there. And we've expressed concern about the fact that they're not solving the problem. The problem is, Chip, that when we sell dairy products into that market, we are currently selling it to only a couple of processors. And those processors don't really have a need for whatever it is we can sell under USMCA. We want to expand the number of customers. And because of the system they have up there, the Canadians are very reluctant to do that because they feel their dairy industry will suffer. And so we are going to continue to battle, continue to push, and continue to express concern about compliance with USMCA.
Your experience on dairy trade obviously is unique to any USDA secretary that we've had. What are the odds? What do you feel the odds are that we're going to be successful in gaining all that access?
Well, we're going to continue to push. This is not going away. And I think that's
right.
What we have to convince the Canadians that they can't basically, you know, do the shell game. They can't move the P around, if you will. They have to basically own up to the promises they made. So we're going to continue to push. We're going to continue to encourage USTR to advocate displeasure, or to express displeasure. And if it, if it takes another case, if it takes another effort, we're going to certainly recommend that.
Right. We had some good news. I'll bet it was killing you that you couldn't be in Menlo with the president earlier this week for the announcement of E-15 availability this summer.
It is what it is. But, this is an important step in terms of trying to bring costs down for folks at the pump. If the president had not made that decision, June 1, we would have seen 2,300 stations across the country that would have put the bag on the pump, and there would not have been access to E15. Now we have access during the summer months, which is a good thing. We're announcing today an expansion $5.6 million going into blender pump infrastructure in seven states: California, Delaware, Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, New York, and South Dakota. Expansion of this opportunity for higher blends. We're also expect and anticipate that the $700 million we set aside for the biofuel industry for pandemic assistance, the payments we expect will be made at the end of April. And we're also dedicating another $100 million, as the president indicated, for continued expansion of installation, retrofitting, and upgrading of dispensing systems and refueling systems so that we can have more E15, E85, B20 throughout the United States. So it's, I think it's a good week for the industry and a reflection of the importance of investing in rural places and in rural business and rural industry opportunity.
Secretary Vilsack, have you been able to get a gauge on how willing the retailers are to upgrade the infrastructure when they've got some funding available to them?
The money goes out very quickly, Chip.
Does it?
When we make the money available, it goes out very quickly. There's a real desire and interest for this. Why? Because it offers the customer a lower cost option. And in this day and age of high fuel prices, being able to offer that customer a lower cost item, we're seeing the price come down a little bit. The president's historic announcement on taking out 1 billion gallons of oil from the strategic reserve every day for a while is certainly helping as well. So the president understands and appreciates the stress that folks are under, and he's trying to do everything he possibly can to make it just a little easier as we get the supply chain and we deal with the situation in Ukraine.
Okay. Secretary Vilsack, Jim Wiesmeyer has been very vocal, and I've been agreeing with him that we need to see your face out in front of the public more often when we are talking about food prices and food shortages, because you do a great job of explaining to consumers what is going on, and that we can have food and fuel produced from U.S. crops. What are the odds that that's going to happen?
Well, Chip, I don't know where Jim is, but I'm out and about quite a bit, and I do express this on an ongoing basis. I can tell you that I think if you ask anyone in the administration who is the most vocal advocate for this industry and the most knowledgeable about it, there's no question that they would say that I am. We work behind the scenes. I'm not a guy that pounds the table very much. I just work hard, and I've worked hard for this industry. And I think we saw examples of that this week: $100 million for expanded distribution systems, $700 million to help biofuel industry during the pandemic, $5.6 million going to go into seven states, E15 summer. There are reasons why all that happens.
yes, there are. There are reasons that happens.
Not to mention the aviation fuel grand challenge, which is a huge industry opportunity. My Lord, this is a 35 billion gallon opportunity, and it doesn't. It's not conflicting with one of the concerns that was expressed about E15 is this going to increase a food cost? I said no, it's not going to increase food costs because there's plenty of corn here. And the challenge we're going to face, obviously, with Ukraine is that they're not going to be able to produce as much. They're not going to be able to export as much. We don't know exactly what the impact of that war is going to be on their crop this year, or what it's going to be in terms of their ability to export. But it's pretty clear that it's not going to be what it usually is. So we've got to figure out ways to work with other nations to make sure that we are providing the food, not only for our people, but making sure that we don't have significant unrest in Africa and Northern Africa and the Middle East because they don't have access to food. We can do this, and we will do this, and America is going to lead this effort. I'm traveling to Germany in a couple of weeks to visit with my counterparts in the G7, and that's going to be the topic of conversation. How do we, as a developed country, developed nations, how do we make sure that at the end of the day, people don't go hungry?
Amen. Amen. 30 seconds. Tell us about the first ever equity action plan.
Well, this is an opportunity for us to make sure, and this is interesting, Chip, because in the president's direction to create these plans, he mentioned the usual suspects. You would think you would mention people of color and things of that nature, but rural is mentioned specifically, because he understands and appreciates that for far too long, rural has been left out of so many different programs. That's why we have this rural tour. That's why we have the president talking about fixing roads and bridges and locks and dams and high-speed internet in rural places, because there is a real commitment to rural America.
Secretary Vilsack, get better. Hope to talk with you again very soon, and happy Easter.
Likewise, Chip. Take care.
All right. Take care. That is USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack. We're going to continue the biofuel and ethanol conversation next, right here on AgriTalk.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from ProFarmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beej, the corn market is the one that's acting like we had some export demand show up, but really today's announcement was for China, but those export sales in the weekly report for corn were pretty good.
Absolutely. You know, we went over 1.3 million tons of old crop corn sales for the week and 403,000 metric tons of new crop sales. So, you know, the old crop number is the headliner there and really giving us price support in the front end of the market this morning.
Yeah, no doubt. The strength that we're seeing with the new contract ties in the July contract, we haven't seen that yet in the May, but it's got to be attracting some chart-based or technical buying in here now, isn't it?
Oh, definitely. You know, and not to mention the December corn, which has had a string of contract highs here. So technically, good, strong market for corn. You know, the next level is $8, obviously, in the old crop there.
Right, right. Okay. Wheat trade is mixed today. We've got the winter wheat under pressure, spring a little bit higher.
Yeah, and you know that's kind of been the trend here recently. Yep. The heavy blizzard, heavy snows that hit the northern plains, going to slow down the planting pace and lead to flooding, and you know, so it's just going to be a slow go the spring up there with the spring wheat planting, okay. And I think that's the support this morning.
All right, take us over to the livestock trade. Bunch of red numbers there.
Yeah, just pulling back, you know, from gains earlier this week. So the cattle market, we did have firmer cash trade, and that supported us early, but getting a little bit of profit taking there ahead of the extended weekend. Same with the hog market.
All right. Thank you very much, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Authority Supreme Herbicide from FMC. Learn more at ag.fmc.com. All my reasons.
All right. Thanks again to USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack for joining us today, giving us updates on several issues that we wanted to get there. Davis, I feel like we're going to be joining this conversation midstream.
Yeah, I think they've already started, from what I hear.
I think they have already started, but let's get these guys on the air before they run out of things to talk about.
Hit the button, Joe.
Hit the button. Jeff Cooper, President and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association. Jeff, welcome back to AgriTalk.
Jeff and I are here. Yep.
Okay, very good. Pete Meyer, Ag Analyst at S&P Global Platts. Pete, welcome back. Short notice, less than 24 hours. Welcome back to AgriTalk.
It's all right.
All right.
No problem. My pleasure.
Okay, good. And Jeff Cooper, we've got you, right, Jeff?
Yep, I'm here. Morning, Chip.
All right. Good deal. Glad that you guys are here. Guys, I want to start with the headline from this week, and we just talked about it a little bit with USDA Secretary Vilsack. President Biden announced he will make E15 available this summer. It's a win for consumers that have E15 available to them, isn't it, Jeff?
It is. It's a win for really all consumers, but especially those that are buying E15 today, because this week's announcement means that they will be able to continue purchasing that fuel throughout the summer months. And we know that they are getting some savings by using E15 today. We're seeing E15 everywhere from 15 to 25 cents per gallon cheaper than E10. So it was a good day for our industry on Tuesday, and a good day for E15 consumers.
Yeah, Jeff, as soon as the word got out that President Biden was going to make the announcement when he was in Iowa, the hit jobs on ethanol and higher blend rates on ethanol started out there. How is it? It still blows me away that publications can get away with saying, well, but E15 is dirtier, and that's why we typically don't burn it in the summer, which is completely false. And in reality, it's just the opposite of that.
It is exactly the opposite of that. E15 is a lower emissions fuel than even E10. And there's a lot of research, a lot of testing out there that shows the potential for smog formation is lower with E15. And lower still with higher blends. As you add more ethanol to gasoline, it reduces emissions of those pollutants that are precursors to ozone and smog formation. So we are seeing a lot of the same myths and misinformation that we always see anytime ethanol's profile is raised on the national stage.
Right.
And we just got to keep fighting back.
Right. It is a continual educational effort out there. Pete, how big of a deal is this to the market? We talked about it yesterday afternoon, but let's go through that again here briefly.
It's not really a big deal. I mean, 40 million or 50 million gallons would only need maybe 13.3 to 16 million bushels. So it's really not a big deal. But at this point, with corn prices at these levels, I mean, do we really need anything else to push the price up when really, you know, food security is becoming an issue in so many parts of the world that it's one of those things. I mean, it's going to add a little bit demand for old crop, and we'll see if we can get it past September 15th. But, you know, I'm looking, as we talked yesterday, Chip, I'm looking more out 10 or 12 years.
Yeah, I want. We're going to get to that, but we need to address the food versus fuel issue too. Because I just asked Secretary Vilsack about that, and how that, and he affirmed again and stated again that we've got corn and can handle it. Now the situation in Ukraine puts a wrinkle into that, and maybe refocusing the conversation on food versus fuel. But Jeff, the productivity is there. We can handle it.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And we've seen it time and time again, Chip. We've seen this food versus fuel argument dredged up again. Anytime there's any news about the potential for growth in ethanol production and use, we see that argument trotted out. And of course, this time it's being trotted out during a global situation where we do have lots of pressure and high commodity prices. But you know, I agree with Peter in terms of what this really means for the corn market this summer. It's really not that big a deal. We're talking about, you know, maybe 10 to 15 million bushels of corn, which in the grand scheme of things is not a lot of grain.
Yep.
But, totally agree.
But the 100 million for increasing the or building up the infrastructure to handle the higher blends, that's kind of a big deal, isn't it, Jeff?
It is a big deal. And we've seen this administration and this USDA, especially under Secretary Vilsack, really committed to investing in the infrastructure to help continue the build out for higher blends. And the reason that's, you know, we think that's such a big deal is it doesn't stop with E15. Most of these stations are putting in, when they get grant money from USDA, they're putting in equipment that can handle blends all the way up to E85. And so that's, you know, that's what we really like to see is these stations are sort of future proofing and preparing for higher blends, you know, around E25, E30, hopefully down the road, you know, talk about 10, 12 years out. That's the blend level that we'd like to see a decade from now is right. You know, we hope we blow right past E15.
Gotcha. Pete Meyer, when I was talking to Secretary Vilsack, he put the sustainable aviation fuel market at 35 billion gallons. Is that right?
No, we used about 24.8 billion gallons of jet pre-pandemic in 2019. So the secretary may be overstating things a little bit, but that's what our data shows, 24.8 billion in jet in 2019. That just out of the U.S. He may be using a more global number. I was more focused on the U.S. since the conversation was around U.S. ethanol.
Okay. Is that the future of ethanol in an EV world?
Well, it's absolutely a big piece of the future for ethanol. And our numbers are, 25, 26 billion gallons of U.S. Aviation fuel consumption. If you take half of that and use ethanol to replace half of current jet fuel use, you're talking about 13 billion gallons of aviation fuel. But guess what? To make that 13 billion gallons of ethanol-based sustainable aviation fuel, you're going to need about 18 or 20 billion gallons of ethanol, just because the process requires more than 1 gallon of ethanol to make one gallon of jet fuel. So we do see it as a huge long-term opportunity. We are spending a tremendous amount of time on SAF because it is such an enormous opportunity for our industry.
Now that's at half of the aviation market, right?
That's right.
Now, if we can go full aviation market, aren't we at 35 billion gallons of ethanol going into SAF?
Well, yeah, and maybe that's where that number comes from. I didn't hear the secretary's comments, but it would take 35 billion gallons of ethanol to get us 26 or 27 billion gallons of aviation fuel.
Yep.
Yeah, the current estimates are, Chip, that it takes 1.8 gallons of ethanol to make a gallon of SAF. So if we took the entire ethanol production from 2019 of, let's call it 15.8 billion gallons, that could turn into 8.8 billion gallons of jet fuel, which would be about a third of the amount of jet fuel consumed in the U.S. in 2019 pre-pandemic.
Seems like a heck of an opportunity, Pete. The investment into that side of the market is there, right?
Yeah.
Well, you really only have two at the moment. You have Gevo and Lanza. I mean, as we talked yesterday, my concern, obviously, and you know, I hear Jeff say that about, you know, moving forward 10 or 12 years. I mean, we cannot overlook the announcement by GM, Ford, and Mercedes that in 10 or 12 years, they will not be making an internal combustion engine. So it's good to hear that Jeff and his team is focused on this SAF, because quite honestly, we think that given the fact that these airlines have committed almost in the entirety to trying to get to a net zero, which is very, very difficult, but SAF will be a huge part of that. And, you know, the other thing is that, as we talked about yesterday, current law in the U.S. only allows planes to fly on 50% SAF. And we would hope that the RFA and their groups would be pushing that number higher as years go on, because in our opinion, Chip, with the proliferation of EVs, we do see the ethanol part of the fuel of the gasoline pool increasing, but the gasoline pool itself going down as we head towards 2035 for the reasons I previously mentioned.
Gotcha. Jeff, what's the future there?
Well, yeah, and we certainly are working on lifting that 50% restriction. That's really tied to the ASTM specifications around sustainable aviation fuels. But as we talked earlier, I mean, even we don't have enough ethanol now to do half of the sustainable aviation fuel market. So we got time to work on that. We did just finish, Burns and McDonnell, a well-known engineering firm, just finished a big study for us on the ethanol to jet opportunity, around the CapEx cost, around what's going to be necessary. Gevo and LanzaJet, the companies that were mentioned, are both members of ours. This is a big focus for us. We're working on a tax credit for sustainable aviation fuels in Congress, looking at how to better integrate SAF into the RFS and LCFS programs. So we agree, this is a big piece of our future. But we also need not lose sight of the opportunities that are right in front of us, like E15 and some of the other things in our traditional markets, the gasoline pool.
Right. We are nearly out of time here, Jeff. Music is starting now. But on the SAF, the consumer, the airlines wants it.
Oh, absolutely. We're talking with United and American and all those folks all the time. They can't get it quick enough.
Gotcha. Pete Meyer, thank you so much for jumping back on with us, buddy. Appreciate you.
It was a pleasure. Thank you. And thank you, Jeff.
Yep.
All right, Pete. Jeff Cooper, President and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you.
We're talking PERS next on AgriTalk.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
We've cleared the schedule for you. Give us a call at 855-482-5524 and join the conversation.
Man, joining the conversation is right today. Holy smokes. Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Davis Michelson is with me. That was quite a conversation with Jeff Cooper and Peter Meyer. For those of you that are worried about the future of the of ethanol in the fuel supply of the United States, good for you. You should be thinking about it, but there's lots of opportunity there, isn't there?
There certainly is, and it's coming from places that maybe we hadn't expected even a year ago.
Right. That's exactly right. Guys, we continue to hear all kinds of reports about PERS in the Midwest hog herd, and we are going to get an update on that from Dr. Paul Sundberg as soon as we make time for this industry spotlight. Joining us now is Ryan Lee, agronomist with Helena Agri Enterprises based in Indiana. Ryan, there's still a lot of concern about fertilizer supply and the rising prices out there. What's your advice as planning gets started?
Yeah, so the way to improve fertilizer efficiency is really, I think, not to focus on the fertilizer, but instead to focus on soil health. And, you know, I kind of think that can be broadly defined as having a robust community of soil microorganisms in your farm. That is a hallmark of a healthy soil, the ability to convert organic forms of fertility into plant-available forms of fertility.
Okay, so what can farmers do to improve soil health?
If we're really thinking about tapping into the residues that are left over on the farm, an enzyme is the tool that you need.
Right. And there's a lot of buzz about enzymes and microbials. How do farmers decide which one to use?
Man, it's a minefield, Chip. So the one thing that I like to keep in mind is that microorganisms and enzymes are either living things or from living things. They don't like extreme environments. So we sell a product called Zypro. It is aimed at converting organic forms of phosphorus to available phosphorus. But really the key enabling technology is that VersaShield component. that protects the enzyme in that harsh environment of the tank until it's in the soil where it can start doing its job, converting organic forms of phosphorus to available phosphorus. Now, that's really a hallmark of soil health.
Gotcha. Okay, before we go, where can listeners go to learn more?
So you can go to the website, helenaagri.com, and get more information about Zypro there, or pick up the phone and give your friendly Indiana agronomist a call. I'd love to talk about it.
And that friendly Indiana agronomist is Ryan Lee, agronomist with Helena Agri Enterprises. Thanks for that insight, Ryan. Okay, let's get to this update on PRRS. We've got Dr. Paul Sundberg with us. He is the executive director of the Swine Health Information Center right there in Ames, Iowa. Dr. Sundberg, thank you for making time for us this morning.
It's good to be with you.
Jim, okay.
Thanks for the opportunity.
Oh, I'm glad that you are here because I continue to get reports. Some of them sound catastrophic, devastating to an operation. And then I hear other reports that say, well, yeah, you know, it's out there, but it's not that bad when we're talking about PRRS. And I know that there are different variants of it. What's the situation? How bad is it?
Yeah, you know, the deal is how bad it is depends on where you are and okay. and what it looks like on your farm. Overall, 2021 to 2022, this winter, it looks a lot like the winter of 2020 to 2021. So it was a lot like last winter, but we've gotten regional outbreaks that are going on right now. And those regional outbreaks that are going on make it look like we may be over what we were last winter as far as PRRS outbreaks go. So it very much depends on your situation and where you are with what's going on with PRRS right now.
Okay. I've also heard some conversation that ideas about how PRRS virus spreads is got a little shakeup by that storm back in December because there was a outbreak immediately following that. What's the conversation around that?
Well, the PRRS is unique in that it is easily spread by aerosol. And so there's a couple of factors that you got to keep in mind with that. One thing is the finishing floors. And when you get a PRRS break on a finishing floor, there's a cloud of virus that comes out of that site. And that is a risk to any breeding herd that's in the area. More so than a breeding herd, if it would break, it doesn't produce that cloud the way that a finishing floor does because of the way that the facilities are built. So that certainly plays a factor into moving this virus around.
Okay. Any idea how big of a bite this has taken from, say, the first quarter pig crop?
Yeah, no, I really don't have that one. I don't have that one for you, Chip. I can tell you that places like Nebraska, Missouri, Illinois, and Indiana, they're all having more outbreaks right now than what their usual baseline is. The different variants, Iowa, Minnesota has the 1.4.4 variant, and that's different than what's in Indiana, Illinois, and Ohio in the mid-corn belt. They've got a different variant there. So there's a variety of different things going on out in the country. And it isn't to minimize the effects on the farm. I'll tell you,
right. If
you get this, you're right. 1.4.4 and 1.7.4 can be very serious and cause bad outbreak on individual farms.
Yeah, it you know, 1,500 pigs in and two-thirds of them dead in a week, that seems pretty devastating to me. Or even having to depopulate a sow herd and basically start all over is what the guy's got to do, right?
Yeah. Some of these strains are really tough to get out. You handle them in a certain way, handle a PRRS outbreak in a certain way, but some of these strains seem to persist longer than what we're used to, and that means that producers have to go to those kinds of extremes.
Yeah, now the PRRS management, we're hearing that it's become a deterrent to expansion. Are you hearing that?
Yeah, that one I don't know. Can't help you with that
okay.
one.
Okay. yep. hey, this is something that we need to continue to monitor, and we really appreciate the updates that we get from the Swine Health Information Center. Dr. Sundberg, thank you so much for making time for us. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, Chip. It's good to talk to you.
All right, very good. Hey, thank you for listening this morning. Come back this afternoon for a conversation with Mike North from EverAg, and tomorrow morning, Free for All with Wiesmeyer, Michelson, and Recker.